welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for October 6th. It's brought to you by One World Sports. I'm John Gibson, and with me is Jim Allen on a Sunday evening. How's it going, bud?
Oh, it's wet. It's wet. We've got a typhoon coming.
Wet and chilly, but yeah, but you're doing all right.
Yeah, chilly, yeah. Forgot the chilly, but it was wet, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the typhoon, yeah, washed out a big game on Sunday, so that was
well, bad, but about as big as a game as you can get when almost everything else has been decided.
Yeah, just about everything, but my question, and it was on Twitter, who's in second?
No, who's on first?
Oh, okay. Well, we know who's in first. We just don't know when they're going to play the second stage, so, or who they're going to play the second stage. So. All right, on this week's show, we've got an interview with Deontay Heath of the Hiroshima Carp. We're going to discuss the Central League, we're going to discuss the Pacific League, and we're going to make our playoff predictions. And a whole lot more, so let's get started.
Clearing the bases!
All right, so this week, it's more like a trivia question.
Can I get into question?
you might get that. It's more on, it's going to be a guess on your part, but it is still.
It's always a guess on my part. I've never
known. Now look. We all know you're very knowledgeable. So a lot of times, even if it is a guess, it's a very educated and very high quality guess. So I know.
I got my bachelor's degree in baseballology.
Baseballology. I like that. All right. So, but it is difficult, but I think you can figure it out because you're you.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Let it rip.
I'm pretty sure you don't know it, but which Central League team had the highest OPS, and that's on base plus slugging percentage, as a team?
This year.
I should say has instead of had because all the games haven't been played. So it's not actually in the past tense, but.
Well, I know the three teams it ain't.
Okay.
No, half of the teams that it ain't, which would be the Giants, the Dragons, and the Tigers. Although the Tigers, I'm not 100% certain. I am going to go with the top run scorers, the Swallows.
You are incorrect. Yeah, that's such a good guess. You know, I knew that you would have an educated guess, but that is not the answer. The answer is the Carp.
Okay.
And the second place Carp were higher than the Giants. The Carp were at 759.
Hmm.
And that's the highest in Japan because SoftBank had 740.
Yeah. It doesn't surprise me. The Carp, I think, were obviously the best choice because of all the home runs. And I do know they led both leagues in home runs by a fairly good margin.
Right. And that mostly because of Brad Eldridge.
Right. Well, and not just because of him, all the guys with 10 home runs and 12 home runs and that in a park, which isn't really a good home run hitter's park. So, yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, fun stuff. But the Swallows, yeah, that makes sense. That's a really good.
Yeah, 759. Yeah, Swallows were 752.
Okay, so Swallows at 752 are
they're second.
They're second. That makes sense.
Carp are 759. And everybody else is. Yeah, the Bay Stars, interesting. The Bay Stars are really bad playing in that park. So the Bay Stars really went from having an actually normally good offense last year to having one of the worst in the league.
Yeah, and they were Jekyll and Hyde at times too. They'd all get hot really at the same time, and they'd have games where they outscore the opposition by three or four times the run total, or they'd all go on the road and they'd be on the road and they'd be really cold and nobody would hit and they wouldn't score and they end up losing games. So yeah. Interesting. Mm. So yeah, Swallows are second. I mean, you were close. You were really close, though.
I was very close. I was 7 OPS points. Okay.
Seven. All right. OPS points. All right. So let's get to the interview now. About 10 days ago, I went out to Jingu Stadium and I caught up with Deontay and I had to ask him how to pronounce his name because I went out to Yokohama before, I think right after his first victory. They came to Yokohama at some point, and I asked him, how do you pronounce your name? Because I had really not been familiar with the name, but since watching some college football subsequently I've heard the name quite often, so maybe I just didn't know how to spell it. But it's Deontay. And he said he's had a coach for a long time who called him by the wrong name or didn't know how to pronounce it or wasn't interested or whatever the case was, he wasn't saying it right. And even in Japanese it's written very strangely. It's not Deontay, but he's a big right-hander. He's built like a linebacker, man. I didn't realize how big he was. He's real big in the shoulders and really thick in the thighs. And he describes himself in this interview as a power pitcher. And there's no doubt when you actually see him in person. I mean, he looks impressive on the mound on TV, but he's even more like a physical specimen once you stand next to him and talk to him or just see him. And I watched him work out a little bit, you know, at Jingu in the back behind the indoor training facility. They have a little outdoor grass area, and they did their long tosses out there. So I watched him, and he's just a great physical specimen. So, and what's really funny is I talked to Patrick Newman, the MPB tracker, before, and he said, "Hey, when you get a chance, try to talk to Deontay Heath." And I said, "Oh, well, I hope he can speak English, because I wasn't sure. I thought he was Dominican, and it turns out he's born in Atlanta and went to college at Tennessee, and he's thoroughly American."
Well, I won't cast aspersions on people from the South, so I'm sure that means you can speak English.
I knew you were going to go there.
I wasn't going. I'm not going there.
Yeah, you just went there. By saying you weren't going there, you visited. You at least drove past the street.
No, I'm saying that some people would, some snobs would say they don't speak English there either. But and coming from an area where snobbery is sort of a very common hobby.
Hobby,
San Francisco Bay Area. It's got to be the snobbiest place on earth.
That's what it is. It's a hobby.
Or whatever it is, avocation or pastime. It's pretty tough out there. So yeah, some people would say that, but no, I go along pretty well with people from the South, so I ain't got no problem.
Good. You know? I ain't got no problem. I love it.
Say that in the Bay Area as well.
Okay. Well, you remember, my folks are from Louisiana. So.
Okay, cowboy.
Cowboy, yeah. Well, I was born in Wyoming, but that's beside the point. Anyway, he's only, he's only thrown 43 innings, or about 43 innings. I think he's an out shy of 43 innings and only pitched in 7 games, but he's got this 3-0 mark, and his last outing wasn't very good, but they didn't lose, or I'm sorry, he didn't get the loss. He's got 35 Ks and 20 walks and 2.35 ERA, probably enough to get a postseason start. I might even, given the fact that Cam Michelio is hurt and probably won't pitch, I might even consider putting him in the pen, at the back of the pen, because you're going to hear in the interview he says his fastball and his slider are the main pitches, his bread and butter pitches. And that sounds to me like a guy who could probably come in for a couple games at the end and do some really good things for that bullpen, which is questionable at the moment. So anyway, it's a very straightforward kind of an interview. He's not the kind of guy to stir things up. So let's go ahead and take a listen to the chat. All right, our guest this week is Deontay Heath of the Hiroshima Carp. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
All right, you came and joined this team long after the second half of the season. So how do you approach the change in philosophy and pitching and workouts and preparation when you come to Japan?
I mean, at the end of the day, it's still baseball, I try to think, keep that mindset as far as still baseball. You got to throw strikes no matter where you are, big leagues, minor leagues, Japan, and you have a job to do no matter what.
All right, well, what are your personal expectations with a move to Japan like this in the middle of the season? Not even the middle, it's like 3/4 through.
I'll just try to go out and give it my all. Just give it my best every time I go out and try to help the team win and get to the playoffs.
Okay, yeah, that sounds good. That's a good CC answer. But, I mean, you certainly have to have personal expectations of what you want to do, because this is your future on the line here. I mean, you're moving from the States to come to Japan, so you have to do well here, because it's hard to go back home and get a major league deal or anything like that. So.
Yes, it is. I think, you know, it'll take care of itself on the field if I do those things as far as going out, giving my all, and throwing strikes. It'll take care of itself.
All right. All right, keep it hidden. All right, and I see you have really good velocity. How do you describe yourself as a pitcher?
I consider myself a power pitcher with good off-speed. I can throw my off-speed any time. I feel like it most of the days.
Most of the day. Now, what are the off-speed pitches you rely on? Because I've seen you have guys in some counts and then have them set up for fastballs and throw them some off-speed pitches.
I have a slider, curveball, split finger, and a changeup.
Which ones do you like to go to, or it just depends on the situation? Which ones do you have most confidence in?
Depending on the situation, but most of the time the slider.
Okay, all right. Now, how difficult is the adjustment to pitching to batters in Japan? How's that been?
It was difficult, but at the same time, you know, I just try to play to my strengths as far as just throwing strikes, pounding the zone, and I just try to stick to my strengths more than trying to make adjustment here, as of right now, anyways.
Okay, what was the most difficult part?
As far as the bat on the field?
Yeah, for the facing the batter.
I say just holding. The last two games, I think I averaged a balk or so.
Yeah, I saw that.
So just holding, and the bunting game, more bunt plays here. Just more defensive plays here.
All right, what about the mounds and the strike zones? How are those?
Strike zone is fair. It's fair. But
fair,
the mounds.
Fair.
The mounds, my hips, my lower body feels it. They're a lot softer here. Mm-hmm. So I'm a little sore after the starts, more than usual with my legs.
In soft, you mean too soft? You mean Goldilocks here, but is it too soft or just different?
They're different. Some are too soft. The first time I pitched at Uno, it just took a little longer to get used to the mound, make the adjustment on the mound.
Well, let's talk about that first start then. You came, and how did you get ready to make that first start? And that was back in August, right?
Yes, against the Tigers at home.
At Mazda, yeah.
Yes.
The Zoom, I like to call it. The Zoom.
Zoom. I just went into it as far as my normal program, as far as throwing long tosses and throwing bullpens, flat ground work. And y'all on the same page as the catcher, going over the scouting report for the hitters and talking to the pitching coaches, and just stuck with the game plan they had for the Tigers.
How would you rate that outing? Because I think you went 6 1/3 and you allowed one run and you got no decision. But how would you rate that outing for yourself?
I felt good. Sometimes it's not all about results. It would have been better if we could have won as a team, but I think it was just good to get the first one out of the way.
Then your first win came at Nagoya Dome. What about pitching at that stadium? How's that?
That was nice. That was actually my first time playing in a dome.
Ever?
So, yes, ever. Oh. I mean, I've been to a dome in Toronto, but I never pitched there. So, mm-hmm. First time for it.
And how would you compare that stadium or that dome, well, to the Toronto one? You said that's the only one you've been in is Toronto?
Yes.
Which one was better?
I say this one.
Good answer. That's my favorite dome in Japan. So, yeah, tell me about that first win. What was going through your mind during the game, and then once you were doing the hero interview, as they call it, but during the game, what was going through your mind?
During the game, I was just trying to, you know, keep it going as far as pounding zone and keep putting up zeros and getting my offense back on the field to hit. And after the game, a lot of that was surprising to me as far as the hero of the game and biting the ball, kissing the ball, all that kind of stuff. A little different.
Yeah, I saw your interview. I was going to offer some suggestions, maybe being a little bit more cheery and a little bit more happy about it. You're so serious. I'm like, smile, man. This is you're going to Disneyland.
Yeah, it was new for me. It was all new for me.
Okay. All right, this time of year is like results only. People care, you know, about the W's and the L's. And what's the scenario that has the Carp going to the Japan Series? How do you see that playing out?
Like you said, it's all about the W's and the L's. And, you know, you want to stay hot, get hot and stay hot going into the playoffs. And I think no matter where you're at, it's all about the W's and the L's, especially late in the season, fighting for a playoff spot.
Okay, so how do you guys get there? How do you guys get through? You're going to have to play a first-round series, it looks like, and then play a second-round series. How do you get hot, and how do you get through the gauntlet?
Playing baseball the right way, I think. This is all my opinion, of course, but just playing baseball the right way as far as hustling and backing up the bases, running out the balls, stuff like that.
So I'm hearing make all the little plays as well as the big ones.
Yes, of course.
Okay. All right, now how much weight do you give to sabermetrics?
As far as sabermetrics, not that much.
He's frowning, folks.
not that much.
Why not?
That's a tough one there. That's a tough one.
Well, they give you a lot of data in Japan. Like, they give you, obviously, they give the hitters a lot of information about pitchers and their tendencies, and they give you a lot of information about batters and their tendencies. But then there's also the sabermetric stuff. So, I mean, how do you implement all that stuff when you're doing your job?
I mean, as far as the data on the hitters, I try to stick to my strengths. You know, I like to just know which batters are hot and some of their tendencies as far as first pitch swing, stuff like that. But other than that, I try to just stick to what I have that day, because if I don't have it, it's going to be hard to make that adjustment if I don't have it, you know. For an example, if a guy can't hit a fastball down the way, but that day, if I can't locate it, it don't matter if he can't hit it or not.
Right,
so.
Right. All right, try to play to your strength. All right, so you've had some success here. Do you see yourself being back in Japan next year?
I'll leave that up to the CARP. I would love to, but I'll leave it up to the CARP.
Okay. Easy, simple, and clean. Thanks a lot, man. Thanks for joining us this week.
Thanks for having me.
All right, Deonte, thank you very, very much. It was good to talk to you. Appreciate your time.
Yeah, it was good hearing, because I've watched him, and he's kind of an unusual pitcher from what we're used to getting in Japan.
Yeah, unusual in what respect, in your opinion?
And, well, the first image of him was the same as yours. My first was seeing, wow, this guy throws hard.
Mm.
And, you know, he takes people, you know, we're taken back a little bit by that. And the other image is that he really has trouble throwing strikes.
Yeah, I would say, you say he throws hard. I say, you know, Otani throws harder. But I think what I see on his stuff is a very live fastball, and it's
yeah.
running and moving all over the place. And
yep.
I'm not sure he can always pinpoint where he wants it to go.
Yeah, well, that is the problem.
Yeah.
And the problem with putting him in relief is, you know, if you're in a close game, you probably don't need three walks.
Don't need.
You could ask
the Hawks.
Give
me the situation when you need the three walks, and then we can
talk. So anyway, well, yeah. So, that kind of struck me. So, yeah, essentially, what does he need to do is, you know, throw strikes and here. Yeah, absolutely. That's, if he could throw strikes, I mean, if he can improve his command to the degree where he can harness that movement.
Mm.
Either two things. One, he'll have a long, impressive career in NPB, or he'll be back in major leagues pretty darn soon.
Yeah.
The interesting thing, that was one. And the other, I says the second thing, is talking about the mounds and the effects of the mounds. Now, that's the first. Pitchers talk about the mounds they do and don't like.
Right.
All the time. But it's the first time somebody talked about the consequences of the mounds they don't like.
Yeah, him saying that his body is sore the next day as a consequence of because of the texture of the mound, because it's soft. That was interesting to me too. Yeah.
And the final thing I would want to mention is something I don't understand.
Hmm.
When you ask somebody, how do you make, and I don't remember your exact quote, how do you make use of sabermetrics? I don't really understand that question. And I'm a sabermetrics person.
I think my question was more along the lines of, how do you view sabermetrics? Not how do you apply it. But this interview was a long time ago now.
Oh, okay. Well, he eventually ended up into what data he used. So it's a player's opinion about things that don't have a lot to do with players.
Mm.
Sort of like asking a home builder what he thinks about economic statistics regarding home starts.
I don't think it's that separated.
Well,
I think it's a closer issue than that. Because he mentioned, okay, I'll get some information about a guy who can't hit a particular pitch, but I don't know if I can apply that, because maybe on that particular day, I'm not able to hit that spot, or I'm not able.
I understood his answers. I still don't understand what the importance of a player's opinion of sabermetrics is. What's your opinion of economics?
Well, I understand where you're going with the question, saying, "Hey, maybe that question was too out there for a guy who's not really concerned with that stuff." But then there are, you know, the thing is, when I talked to Tadahito Iguchi of the mm-hmm. Marines, he explained to me how the Japanese players tend to go through all that information that they get.
True.
That when he went to the States, he said, you know, the way they prepare in the States, it was pretty loose. Nobody was really worried about the sabermetrics and all that stuff. They were more concerned about just what Deontay said, is getting their game together and working on their strengths and trying to focus on what they do best and not worry too much about what the other guys were there. And so
yeah,
I think there's a separation there.
I wouldn't call what the Japanese teams do sabermetrics. It's too broad of a term. They just apply all this data. Well, you know, they're not really measuring anything to get to a point.
The sabermetrics is not a form of data to apply in game situation. I think it is.
It can be. I mean, it's something you can learn from, but it's sort of like looking at big picture stuff to learn all kinds of different things. I mean, it's like economics. It can be something that's useful on the level of, you know, why do people make choices that they do in restaurants, or why do they make choices that they do in healthcare? No. I mean, it could be very big issues or it could be very small issues, but it's a very broad expression. That's why if you say it's in economics, I'm not trying to be contrary here. It's just really big field.
Well, I understand. So you're against that question, but I remember not against it, but you're not sure that that's a great question. I understand your position, and I remind you that whenever you talk to Josh Whitesell, that you used to tell me that you would talk to him about detailed information about data that you guys.
We talked about concepts. We talk about concepts, about things that we know about how baseball works. But not things like that he would use. I mean, it wouldn't affect his game. Because when we talk about how sabermetrics affects the game, I think right now the big thing, obviously, you see this going on in the majors all the time, are all the shifts.
Right, the shifts.
But as the player, the numbers behind it are completely irrelevant. You have guys who are trying to play you a certain way, and the question is, do you have a count to it? It's irrelevant whether you think sabermetrics are important or not. It's only a matter of whether you can make an adjustment. That's obviously something that happens.
As an
effect. But if you're a player, I can't see where it matters one way or other what your opinion of it is. It's just something you have to adjust to.
Well, yeah, and we also, you and I both, in fact, I read your copy of Moneyball, and we both saw the movie, I think. I think when we talk about sabermetrics as a whole, it's a very broad field. But when maybe there's some aspects that the players can apply to their games, like that we saw in the movie where we say, hey, location, if you're hitting the ball in these locations, your batting averages are higher than when you're hitting here. And,
yeah.
You know, these are your hot spots and these are not.
Yeah, I think that's a matter of information. You know, just to be more specific, just information regarding. I'm really curious because you always get. I mean, the players always give you the answer. You see, I'm not against the results you're getting. I'm just saying that the question is so broad. I don't quite get it. But when how the players apply,
mm-hmm.
I'm really interested in what information players use to inform their adjustments.
Interesting. All right. So you've been taking shots at my questions, but that's fine. That's fine.
I'm trying to get us on the same, you know, have the same sort of working vocabulary.
No, I understand. I'm just, you know, I was looking for the kind of answer that he gave me, which is, you know, either I use it and I try to pitch to these guys' weaknesses, or, you know, it really doesn't affect me. And especially the biggest thing was this guy came over, like I said in the interview, so late in the season. It's very difficult. He's got to perform right away in terms of, you know, can we use him or can we not use him? So I was thinking he had to use everything under the sun to get ready, get prepared, and get success. And I wanted to know if sabermetrics was an acceptable part of that, because when you come over here, they bombard you with data.
Yeah, they do.
And I wanted to know how he adjusted with that stuff, but without asking him straight away, how did you make the adjustment? Because I had already asked him anyway about the adjustments that he made. So I snuck that one in. That was a backdoor. That was a backdoor slider I tried to get through. And he did answer the question in that, you know, if he's not hitting particular spots, then it really doesn't matter
Right. I mean, there's so many different ways you can do it, but yeah, and I'm as you know, I'm pretty sensitive to begin with, and I'm hypersensitive when it comes to something that I invest a lot in. Mm. And there's basically a whole tribe out there. There's a whole tribe out there who, you know, it's like, oh, you're a stat head. Let's kill him and throw him in the river.
You know, no, we want to cage him. We want to watch. We want to just put you in the cage and watch and see how you react to stuff. Ooh, there's a number flashing across the wall. What's he going to do?
that's what the sabermetrics people will do.
But this interview,
put him in a cage and say, let's see if we can run an experiment.
This whole interview for me was like a boxing match. I mean, I kept hitting him with these questions or trying to throw these questions, and he just kept throwing up the gloves and doing the rope-a-dope. And, you know, he was doing his best to absorb the blow and avoid damage. And then he was so PC the whole time. And, you know, like I said, after I delivered a couple questions, I jabbed him with some follow-ups, and he deflected us going with a couple of those too. So, you know, I got him to open up a little bit, I think. And it's just hard to imagine a guy like that having that much trouble locating his fastball. And I don't think he has a great deal of trouble, but again, when you're out there and you have to make a number of pitches to guys, let's say, you know, five or six in an at bat, maybe one of them you're not going to get exactly where you want, and then the guy's got you timed if you're just throwing a couple different pitches. And we talked about that off when we weren't recording. I said, you know, I've seen a lot of power pitchers come to Japan, and they said, well, you know, these guys, I can get them out, and they're real confident. But I said, look, they can time you. You know, it's not like they're not baseball players. They're really good at timing, and they can catch up with fastballs. And the curveballs, an array of off-speed pitches are necessary to be able to control and pinpoint them. And if you can do that, you can have the success mixing those pitches in, as long as you're not tipping everything. But I don't know. Like I said in the tape, he gave him this big scrunchy face when I mentioned the word sabermetrics. So,
well, see, I completely understand that. It's almost like you're teasing them with it. Cause you know, and I've heard this, I remember this because I remember when Bill James went to the Red Sox, and Bill James had written, he posited a number of, discussions. He asked questions basically, and then tries to answer them. He basically said, doesn't it make sense if you have guys who are going to make a zillion dollars as closers because they save games, and the more you pile them, it's very economically silly to pay one guy so much money when there are cheaper people available who can do the same thing.
Mm.
Basically, they're just not quote unquote closers, you know, and they don't have saves clause. So if you had two or three guys who basically can do the same thing, or two guys, or you figure it out, it's really not, you know, you realize what goes into it. There aren't these magical people. I mean, baseball has been telling us there are these magical guys called closers, and then here comes Koji Uehara, who wasn't a magical guy called a closer until he was the best in the league.
Yeah.
So it's not a precise science. It's not something, you know, it's not like the Freemasonry or something where there's a secret, you know, a secret society of closers and nobody else is admitted. It's a very fuzzy area. I mean, people can do it, and some people can acclimate to it, provided they have the right tools and mental makeup and the right character. But there's a lot more of those people than there are closers. There's a lot more people who can be closers than are closers. So his thinking was, if we share the workload between two or three guys, then we're not worried about one guy blowing up and ruining our season. So when he went to Boston, one reporter who thought anybody who said batting average is not the biggest stat in the world is a communist, said, you know, he would go to all the pitchers and say, you know, the Red Sox just hired a consultant who thinks the Red Sox shouldn't have a closer. What do you think about that? He said to all the pitchers. Mm-hmm. He says, well, I'm against that. I depend on having a closer. We like to have a closer in our bullpen. Yeah, wouldn't you think? But this guy's against that stuff. And he wasn't against having a closer. He was just thinking of more sensible ways to manage teams. Anyway, so that whole thing was, I remember that really well, because I'm one of these people who says, why do we have to do it this way? Can we do it another way? And so that often meets with resistance. Can we do it another way? No, because we're baseball players. Oh, I see. Okay.
Well, yeah, we could talk about this in the off season. This
sure.
would be a good debate, but you know, I just after what happened on it was Saturday in the major leagues in the States, but it was Sunday for us, and watching the games, including the 18 inning game by the Giants, and all their pitchers did really well in their situations, and the Nationals pitchers did well.
Absolutely.
Too. I mean, it was one pitch, and that decided that game, but. Of course, on the West Coast in the Dodger game, it was guy couldn't get, you know, he could get the ball over the plate, but people were whacking it. So he ended up blowing the lead, but the closer came in and they wanted to get the ball to him. They got it to him and he's the guy who shut it down. So, I think they're different, or differing opinions on that stuff. And we'll get to that
sure.
probably in the off season. But,
sure.
Right now I want to talk about the Central League race. And now we know that this game was washed out today between the Carp and the Giants. And this is supposed to be the game that's going to decide second place and who's going to play host.
Well, supposed to be.
Well,
it is the game.
Well, it's supposed to be if it gets played because yeah. we want it to get. It's supposed to rain on Monday as well, so I don't really see the.
Well, it's supposed to rain here on Monday.
Well,
it's going to be nice in Hiroshima tomorrow. The typhoon will have gone.
We hope.
Well, it's usually nice after. Usually it's nice and hot and sunny after the typhoon. So, well, yeah, basically the Carp need not to lose.
Yeah, they need a win or a tie. And it
shouldn't. Tie.
It shouldn't really have come down to this. They should have, I mean, they could, they had the opportunity to win at home on Wednesday and they played the Tigers and it was a really exciting game. I guess that night it was 4-2. The Tigers ended up winning at the Zoom, but it was more like the Carp gave the game away. And, as we get to closer to making our predictions for the first stage, I don't care where they play, if they play at Mazda Stadium at the Zoom or if they play at Koshien. I think that day, Daichi Osato, who was the rookie right-hander, he was a little bit shaky early. He gave up a run in the first inning. And then later on, Ryosuke Kikuchi, an MVP candidate, in my opinion, he bounced a sure double play throw to first, and that ended up leading to a run. And then later on, they blew a run down in which Osato and Soyogi was playing third and Aizawa was catching. They botched this thing something big time and let the slow-footed Takahiro Arai score a run. It's not like somebody with blazing speed, and I've never even seen this in high school where they blow a run down between third and home plate and let the runner come home and score. So they just blew this game.
Yeah, kind of. Usually that's what you're trying to prevent.
Yeah, anything. You chase the guy back to third place, the coach gets upset, but he doesn't try to kill somebody.
Yeah, but your point about Arai is good because there are slow guys who are really good base runners.
Mm-hmm.
And Nobuhiko Matsunaka is my favorite exception. This is a guy who knows precisely when to get a jump, how much of a jump he can take, how far he can go, when to push it, when not to push it. I never, ever, ever see him make a bad decision on the base. This guy scores from balls that you never would think should be scored upon. The sacrifice flies, shallow center field. This guy will take off if the conditions are right for it. And I've never seen him thrown out.
Right.
And then you get Takahiro Arai, who's not a good base runner.
Yeah.
Well, which probably is why he was in the rundown.
No, he was in the rundown because it was a tapper back to the pitcher, and he basically
committed.
Yeah, committed. Well, I don't think he committed to going, but I think he thought it was going
to
get past the pitcher, and it didn't. Okay. So he was just caught in no minute. I don't blame him for that. I probably would have been.
Yeah, I didn't see the play, so I can't talk.
So now there's the three-game first stage. We don't know where it's going to be played, but I will start first, and I will predict that the Hanshin Tigers – I'm going to give the Carp a game because they're playing at home. I expect to see Kenta Maeda get the start in game one. I'm assuming that Daichi Osada, the rookie, is going to pitch in game two. The real interesting thing is who's going to pitch that third game, because that's going to be the big game, the leverage game or the pivotal game in that series, obviously.
Well, if it was the Tigers, if it was Wada managing, he'd save Maeda for the third game. And say he's hurt.
Yeah.
Couldn't pitch the first two.
So I'm thinking Deontay could get that game, but do they want to give it to a first year, not even a guy who's pitched that long in MPB? This would be his eighth start probably, or do they want to give it to Nomura? I don't know. On the Hanshin side, I think Messenger, Nomi, Iwata, I think those are the guys who are going to throw if it goes three games, and I can see Iwata getting the job done in that game, in that third game. I think Brian Bullington is still out injured. I don't even know what the prognosis for him is. So
yeah, that's a big hit, and being without Cam Mikolai was another hurt. I like Nakazaki, and I like but their bullpen is thinner than it has been.
Yeah, Ichioka gone with Nakata. Len Nakata hasn't been great. None of them have really been great. They've just been off and on. They've been up and down. So I think
Cam's back there. I'm really comfortable.
Yeah.
If he's not, Nakazaki. Now I like Nakazaki, but he just can't be the guy, the whole guy, all the time.
No, and he's not consistent enough for me. He's one of those guys, like I was explaining earlier. If he's got to throw six or seven pitches, one of them is going to be juicy. Now they don't always hit him, and they don't always get a hold of it, or it doesn't always get past the defense, but they're going to make good contact off of him the more pitches he has to throw. So, I mean, he'll make three good ones or four good ones, and then he'll make a pitch that's very hittable. So, who are you picking?
I'm picking the Carp because, well, I have to think, one, they do play well at home. Two, their offense is so much better than the Tigers. Third, their pitching, the starting pitching, the bullpen. The Carp are a wild card. They score a lot of runs. They give up a lot of runs, but you know it's basically a matter of timing and luck. Yeah. Now here's the thing: they are playing at home, which is a positive.
No, we don't know that yet.
Pardon? Yeah. Well, okay.
We're assuming
we'll assume they're going to play. They're going to have a meaningless game for the Giants at home, which they need to tie. Okay. Now, if they play at Koshien, I'm a little less certain, but the other thing is they're playing the Tigers, and the Tigers have not shown that they can actually win in the postseason.
That's true.
I mean, win at all.
Yes, but I just don't like the tone and the tenor of the play that's been going on with the Carp, and they haven't hit well. You know, all the things that they were doing well to win those games earlier in the season, they're not doing now. And I think in a playoff situation, especially with the poor defense that they showed the other day, I think the one little play here or there is going to turn that series. It could be in game one. It could be in game two.
It could, but
and
you're
if it gets
also,
to game three, I think they're toast.
But you also overlook the fact that while they do, you know, they had a bad game defensively. They had one really bad game defensively.
Yeah, this was a really bad game.
Then overall, they're very good defensively.
Overall, yeah, in general,
yeah,
too. But that's
in
been
general,
the case.
No, but none of the teams are comparable to them.
That has been the case for a while. In fact, when we talked earlier this season, I think I talked about the fact that Michael Westbay and his algorithm that he used to pick the teams, and he had the Carp finishing first. I said they have first place talent. I really believe they have first place talent. And when we look back on this team in another three or four, maybe 5 years, we're going to say, look at all the talent they had. Why didn't this team, first of all, win the Central League? And then
I don't think that'll happen. I think what's going to happen is this team is going to win this team will win the Central League. And the reason they're going to win the Central League is because their biggest issue right now is lack of experience and lack of, basically experience and making better judgments. They got all the tools right now. Do they have issues with free agents? Yes, you know, every year. So that, I mean, they always face that talent drain. But no, I don't think so. I think the Carp will win the pennant.
You mean come through the?
No, I mean within the next couple of years, the Carp will win the Central League championship, and we won't say, well, they're the team that didn't win the pennant.
I'm hoping so. Yeah, I think
could they go to the Japan Series this year? Well, you know, it's hard playing that thing in Tokyo Dome where, you know, you have to win twice as many games as the Giants do.
Mm-hmm.
You got to win four. They can win two, and you got to win four.
Yeah.
And on their turf, and that's hard. Although Tokyo Dome is a good park for the Carp to play in because they got the pop. Yeah. They got more power than the Giants do for sure. And, their pitchers will give up more home runs, but that's another story. But I think they'll beat the Tigers. I don't think the Tigers, Tigers have a monkey on their back, when they get, you know, and I'm not confident picking them as much as I love a lot of the Tigers players.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like the Tigers infield defense except for Torii Tani.
I don't like it either, but I trust them to make plays. That's all I can say. Is I trust them more to make plays.
I trust them to make many fewer plays.
I mean, if they get the ball, if they field the ball, I think they're going to throw it well. I can't say that for the Carp. They panicked. They've not done the things that they need to do to win these tight games. And in a playoff situation, you just said it, they're young. They lack experience. They had some last year. I know they grew a little bit, but I still think they're young. Tanaka's young at shortstop. He doesn't have any of the experience that the team gained last year. Since being a rookie and all, I hope they do well, but if I'm a betting man, I'm gonna bet on Hanshin. All right.
Interesting. All right. Oh, sounds like a bet we got.
All right. How about the Pacific League race? Now the Hawks, they won a 10 inning walk off game the other day, and they never had a magic number, and they ended up.
Well, of course they had a magic number. Number in Japan.
They didn't have the Japanese style magic number. How's that?
Yeah.
And there were tears on both sides. It was a real emotional game, and you know the Buffaloes. They just couldn't come through. It was really interesting. Both teams had the bases loaded, and it was a 10-inning walk-off game. In the top of the 10th, the Buffaloes had the bases loaded, and they had Willie Mopeña at the plate. And, you know, perhaps when the playoffs come, he'll be a little bit more patient. I mean, the pitch he swung at, I don't think he could have done anything with. I think it was a first pitch, and he popped it up down the third baseline. I think if he takes that pitch, just to be willing to take a strike, that you can't do anything with and don't fear being behind in the count and seeing if you can get something better to hit. I think in that situation, he kind of panicked. And then you looked at...
I think it's a pitch that he genuinely thought he could hit.
Well, he did. He just hit it foul.
it's not like only if... I don't think he goes that deep into thinking, being afraid of getting behind in the count. I'm not certain he's quite he quite understands the concept of being in count, behind in counts.
Oh,
he just, you know, he's up there to hit.
But he hasn't been.
Yeah.
And I think in that situation with the bases loaded, a lot of guys, you know, I've heard a lot of batters talk about, hey, look, I get to pick what I want to swing at because the pitcher has to get me out for sure. And he's not going to walk me. And you have the ability to be patient. And I don't think he was very patient in that at bat. I think that's why I used the word panic, which probably wasn't a good, I think he rushed it. It wasn't a panic situation.
Yeah.
He just rushed it.
And that's politically correct.
Yeah. And so, like I said, it was a great game. This was Thursday night. So SoftBank wins its 16th Pacific League title, and congratulations to them. And like I said, the tears on both sides, but the indelible image that, well, two of them, indelible images that are going to stick with me are Hikaru Ito, the catcher I like with the Buffaloes.
I know.
Who was
Watching too much high school sports in Japan.
Yeah, he was inconsolable.
He was sobbing.
He was inconsolable and could barely, I mean, he was gripped with agony. Just the agony of defeat, and he was paralyzed by it, and he couldn't walk back to the bench, and you see Esteban Jimon guiding him back to the bench, and he's in tears, and he's distraught, and you know that image, and then the other image of Koji Akiyama, the skipper of the SoftBank Hawks, who was crying, but he didn't know what to do with himself. I mean, he's walking out to the field. He wanted to hug everybody, and he's so bad at hugging. Did you see? I mean, it was with the
Japanese hug.
He's not, but he wanted to, but he even in his emotion, he was holding
his
back.
DNA. He's going like, I want to hug you, but I'm the manager.
Yeah, don't get too close there, buddy, but good job. So I thought, you know, one thing in that game was Hiroshi Moriwaki, the skipper of the Buffaloes. I thought he was quick on the trigger in yanking Brandon Dixon, and then he went with Maestri in the inning that they lost the game, and he started the inning with Alessandro. And we know Alessandro's a great guy, and he's been really clutch for them down the stretch. He helped them win a bunch of those games to get him in. But didn't we just talk about Mr. Higa and how he had set a Pacific League record for consecutive scoreless innings? Didn't we just talk about?
He wasn't in there very long, was he?
Yeah. Higa gave up the hit to Nobuhiro Matsuda, the game-winning single, and that was the only batter he faced. And I don't really remember how many pitches he threw, but I think it was two or three. And I think Higa should have been out there to start the inning. I think he had done everything so well. I think, you know, he used Sato for a couple of innings. His setup
guy
should be the closer. I think he should. I think he's going to be closing next year. And then he went to
Hirano was there
and he did well. I mean, he got out of his inning, I think, just a base runner. And then he goes to Alessandra, and I'm like, you know, you got Higa out there. This guy had put up all these scoreless innings. Isn't this backwards? And he let Alessandro get into trouble and walk a couple guys. And I'm just thinking, man, you need to go to the trigger. He went to the trigger really early on Dixon, but he held back. So I think he got a little bit of experience here, because in managing in these close games and these really tight situations. And I think he might do things a little bit differently when they get to the playoffs. And I remember this matchup that we're going to see, the Fighters and the Oryx Buffaloes, was it 2008 that we saw this matchup? And the Buffaloes didn't...
It was 2008. The Fighters didn't even know they stopped in Osaka on the way to Cebu Dome. They're going like, wait, weren't we just in Osaka 2 days ago? I don't remember. Yeah,
were those practice
games? Did we play
somebody? Were those practice games or what? Yeah, yeah, two quick games, the Fighters, you know, wiped them out. And I as much as I don't want to say that that's going to happen again, well, we'll get into it here. Who are you going to pick and why in that best of three series?
Well, you know, I had this impression that the Fighters have been playing well. The Fighters had a little winning streak at the end of September, you know, that kept them in third place. And so I had this impression they were playing better, but they really weren't.
No,
I mean,
they weren't.
You know, they weren't. No, I mean, if you look at what they did in September, I'd have to say that they weren't the best team of the bunch. They don't play well on the road. The Buffaloes do play pretty well at home, and the Buffaloes are a better team to begin with, and you know, never mind whether, you know, what they were doing recently. So I think the Buffaloes are going to take both of those games.
Yeah, I got both of those games. You got just a two-game sweep then.
Yeah.
I think we're going to see Shohei Ohtani probably going to start the first game for the Fighters. And then it gets interesting. And I think in this case, Hiromitsu Ochiai would be the best manager to actually run this team at this point, because I think Naoyuki Uwasawa, the young right-hander, is probably going to pitch. He's probably going to pitch game two, but if you're Ochiai, you wave a Nakamura out there or a Mitsuo Yoshikawa and see if you know,
throw it at the wall and see if it sticks.
Well, no, you say, hey, let's get them ready for our left-hander, or get them thinking left-hander and then switch and throw the right-hander at the last second. So I think Yoshikawa is probably going to throw maybe the third game. I think Uwasawa or Urano, the other right-handed, young right-handed pitcher, but I don't see both of their rookie guys going out there to pitch in that.
I don't either. Urano's not been doing that well recently.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be Nakamura, Yoshikawa, or one of those two guys.
Uwasawa, yeah. I would think Uwasawa. And then for the Buffaloes, probably Chihiro Kaneko is going to get game one. I don't know about Yuki Nishi. He hasn't really...
And I guess, you know, this is why all of a sudden when we started talking about this, I'm going, geez, all I was thinking about all day was, boy, which game is Yuki Nishi going to lose?
Yeah, if you're going to pitch him, you can't put him in the third game because you might have to yank him so soon. And Dixon, you know, you probably fired him up a little bit and yanking him the way he did the other day. So just kind of early. So I think Dixon gets a start in game two, and I think you gotta put Nishi out there, and if he has trouble, yank him early.
I think I'd go with a bullpen game, one of those things. Bring out Matsuba to start.
Yeah, you know, if they get to the second stage, then they have some guys at least who are going to keep them in the game. And wait for Kaneko to get back, but Kaneko is no sure thing. So I mean, he's no sure thing either. So
nobody is. But nobody is.
The Darvish
is
of the
almost
world.
Like the one you expect to blow up.
Keep away from open flame.
Kansai farm celebrity blow up.
Keep him away from open flame. Well, I'm going to pick the Buffaloes too, and you know, I don't have a lot of confidence in it because I don't like what they've been doing in tight games. When they win games and they have a substantial lead or a 3-run lead or so, they look really completely different. But when it's a close game, they tend to do things, and it's mostly sparked from the manager for me, because I talked to Aaron Valdez before, and he said, you know, this is a guy who in front of the cameras, and you can actually see it in front of the cameras, because he's the kind of guy, he's twitchy. He's fidgeting, yeah. He's twitchy, he's nervous, he's looking down, he's taking his cap off and looks nervous. But in the back, outside of the reach or the outside of the view of cameras, he's even worse, he says. He's just the panicky kind of guy, and I think that stuff kind of trickles down to the players. And
okay, know, well, yeah. That's something I hadn't heard.
Yeah, I heard that. So I don't think he's the. I think he has been good for that team, and he has helped develop some of the guys and get them. You know, I think he brought that because he came from SoftBank. He learned a lot from SoftBank, and he brought.
Well, he's a very you know, what I like about him is okay, is the. The fact that he, you know, he comes in and he lets the players play.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't, you know, and he uses everybody. And what I like about that is you're not in the doghouse with him.
Yeah, I've seen
or at
that.
Least that's my perception.
I would agree with that because I've seen
in
a lot
sense
of guys
that, you know, and he's got plans on how to use these different guys. You know, and he, you know, to me, the Oryx bullpen is kind of a knot, you know, it's the world's largest ball of twine. All these guys all look alike. I mean, well, I know Higa's different. And,
yeah.
And of course, Tatsuya Sato biceps is, I think of him, he's always got his left shirt sleeve pulled up to show his biceps.
What, those twigs?
No, he's not, well, but he's, you know, he's got it showing there. He's got it going, his muscle shirt, but only the left sleeve is pulled up, not the right.
Welcome to the twig show. Arm. Yeah, welcome to the Twig Show is what it is.
Anyway, so, you know, and he gets something, and, you know, he knows these guys, and they've got – he's not afraid to use it. I mean, he's even got Mahara, and he's not afraid. Now, tell me, that's guts. If you've got Mahara in your bullpen and you're not afraid to use him, either you're crazy or you got guts.
Maybe
– I'm going to go with guts.
I'll go with – throw him out there and go to the locker room because you just can't watch. You know, if he gets a guy out, you know, you come running out and grab him off the mound, I guess. I don't know.
yeah, I'm still, you know, but he keeps, I think there's something to be said. But I also like the idea that all these teams are good teams and they have good team chemistry, the team chemistry. Mm. But I like Buffalo. I like the Buffalo's attitude pretty good. I like that. And I think that's a positive, and I think Moriwaki, that works well with him. I think he's a good match for that team.
Okay.
He may be twitchy, but I think he's, I don't want to say anything about, Kuriyama. I don't think he's a very sharp, he's not the sharpest cookie cutter in the bunch, I don't think.
I don't think so either. So, I think Moriwaki can outmanage him, and I think they will, and I think they get past, I'm gonna say 3 games, but I expect it to be done in 2, and if not, that's just because.
You said 2! You said a sweep!
Yeah, I did. I said it, but
you don't believe it.
I don't believe it. I think it's going to go 3 because Moriwaki's going to blow a game. That's just what he does. All right. Now this series, if they finish in 2 games, then we'll be able to talk about them next week and talk about the matchups. But if not, we're going to be taping on Sunday night, probably next week, Sunday night in Japan. So that means we'll have to guess who gets through, and then we'll have to make our predictions off of that. But I think we're going to see one sweep, so hopefully it's the Buffaloes.
Okay.
All right.
I'm not picky. All sweeps are good sweeps.
Good sweeps are all sweeps, especially, yes. Yes, sweep. Clean. Keep it clean.
Home sweep.
A seamless transition over to the Central League and back to Tetsuto Yamada, who really has gained a lot of respect from a lot of people, I think, this year. Nobody really expected him probably to get where he is. He's at 188 hits. He needs 3 more hits to tie the all-time record for Japanese players who are right-handed batters in NPB. And he needs 2 more hits to tie the club record for hits in a season by a right-handed batter who's Japanese.
Okay, I was wondering what that was. I was thinking maybe right-handed second baseman, right-handed hitting second baseman out of high school.
Who hit in the daytime off of right-handed pitchers at home stadiums.
Yeah. Well, I will agree with you. Nobody expected him to be where he is. Now, I expected him to be most of the way where he is, but not that much. I expected him to be pretty darn good based on what he'd done. But this is, you know, he took a major step forward. He didn't have to take a major step forward to be a really, really good player.
Yeah, well.
But he did.
Yeah.
You know, and the big thing, of course, was the power.
Yeah, that's the thing. And I went nuts one day and I said, he's got the most home runs of any Japanese player in Japan. And somebody said, Okawari-kun has 31.
Yeah, what about the fat guy?
I'm like, oh, that's right. I'm just losing my mind because this guy, I mean, I just walked by him that day or a couple of days before that. And I'm like, he's like half my size. I don't know how he does it. I don't know how he generates the power.
He's got really good bat speed.
Yeah,
so.
The thing with the 28 home runs is a big shock, but he's got 38 doubles to go with him. So, I mean, it's just no, this guy is no joke. He's making people forget about Norichika Aoki, who's having a really good season, and not really good, but a decent season, and has gotten his share of hits in the postseason for the Kansas City Royals. And
his share, one hit. He must not have a high expectation.
I think he was involved in a couple of runs. In fact, one with that hit, and then another
two.
One when he got
he
a walk.
He was involved in two runs.
And when he got a walk. So,
one game.
He's doing all right. I mean, he's doing all right. Anyway. It's fantastic to see this guy, Yamada. I'm going to call him the little hitman. The little hitman.
Yeah, his defense ain't where
we were talking about that.
But I was talking about that with Jason, I think. And basically, yeah, I see him as the best. Now, I don't see him winning a Golden Glove because, you know, he's going to have to take it out of Kikuchi's cold, dead hands before that happens.
Right.
But he's the best nine. I think his defense has improved a bit. But when I spoke to him, I did a story on him, I'm going to say in May, end of May, or the beginning of June.
Yeah, I think I
saw when he had about 15 home runs. And he said, well, I'm going to stay on the first team because of my hitting. So my defense is on the back burner.
Right. Yeah, it'll develop. But he's gotten better. I think since the time you talked to him, I've seen him make better play. I mean, he had a tendency to have some accidents out there. And I think he has 13 errors. I think that leads the team. So he's got his issues, but he plays, you know, he gets to enough balls, he makes enough plays, and he certainly is going to add so much offense that he's worth turning the blind eye or closing one
eye. Yeah, he's probably a second baseman that even Tatsun Norihara would let play every day.
That's true, especially if he's going to hit like that. And, you know, he'd take the bad. You know, you've got to take the bad with the good with these young players, and I think he would eat that up. So, okay, a couple notes. The Sunday night was the retirement ceremony for Atsunori Inaba of the Nippon Ham Fighters, and Makoto Kaneko also had his retirement game, like the game before, which was a couple days before. But the thing about the ceremonies were really nice. Inaba was really smooth in his speech, and so was Kaneko, and they were all emotional, and everybody did the Inaba jump for Atsunori Inaba. But the thing that impressed me the most was they had video messages from a number of people for the Kaneko ceremony, and Trey Hillman, the former manager, came on, and in his message, and I quote, "In 20 years of coaching, you're my favorite shortstop."
Wow.
That was huge praise for me. That was just wonderful. That's amazing.
There was another guy who retired who was one of Trey Hillman's former shortstops, I think. Was that guy who played in the Yankees, Jomper or Jackson or something?
Jared Dieter?
Danny Jackson?
Jared
I think
Dieter?
He played for Trey in Columbus. Oh, Derek Jeter. Derek Jeter.
But see, maybe he
was. It might have been just 1 year in Columbus because Trey, but yeah.
No, maybe it wasn't his favorite.
Well,
he liked him a lot.
He didn't play in the minors very long.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is. He was calling him Derek Dieter too and didn't really get to know his name.
He's probably calling him Deontay Heath.
Oh, man. But anyway, those were two really interesting. I'm sorry, not. Those were two great gentlemen, and their ceremonies were really, really touching, and they were, their speeches were poignant. I really enjoyed both. They were very well done, and Inaba, you know, he knows he's going to play. I think Kaneko and some of the guys were more emotional with him because they know he's not really going to play in the postseason, but I think Inaba's going to get a few cuts in the postseason, so they know he's going to be there. And it, if they win, and if they get through the Japan Series somehow, they could be playing more games back at Sapporo Dome. So, you know,
right.
The jump is not dead. I just think if another player joins the Fighters, you know, from here on out and has the last name of Inaba, he's really going to have to earn an Inaba jump. He's not going to be able to get it for a couple
games. Well, you know, the jump has evolved quite a bit. It's not the jump it used to be.
It's not the jump it used to be. None of us is.
True. So it used to be, they didn't even do it all the time when he came to bat. It used to be a rally thing.
Right.
It was because we were talking about that. He says, you know, it's only when they only bring that out when it's a big situation.
The rally monkey.
It was like the rally, but they didn't stop. It went all the time he was batting. It wasn't one time and bum, 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 it's done. Everybody sit down. But I think what happened was is they were tearing Sapporo Dome to the foundations to have that thing go on for a 3-minute at bat.
Yeah.
So they stopped that, but now they do it. They do a little watered down version every time he bats. So
yeah,
they tried it again after a couple of times. They tried it like another time. They had one officially sanctioned Inaba jump in his ceremony, and then they tried to do it again. It was kind of, I think they were going, okay, you've had your fun. Sit down.
All right. One more or two more quick notes. One, Norihiro Nakamura, who had a Facebook incident where he was venting about the way they were playing when he was at bat earlier this year and got sent to the farm. Anyway, that was earlier this year, and so he was released. And Shugo Fuji, a left-hander who won a bunch of games for, I thought he led them in wins last year, I think, but he's gone. And then the Marines also released Gigi Sato, so he'll probably head back to Italy or Australia or someplace where he can
play. You see the one about Kensuke Tanaka coming back to Japan next year?
I didn't see that, but I know that the Lions are extended or took the interim tag off of Norio Tanabe, and that I heard that Dave Okubo was in line to become the manager of the Rakuten Eagles. So, and this Norio Tanabe was with the Lions, so he's going to be their manager next year. I didn't hear about Kensuke Tanaka. What, are you coming back to where?
Well, basically, a bunch of teams are trying to get him to come back, and the Fighters are saying, well, we're first in line. And apparently the word was, if he does come back, he would prefer to go back to the Fighters. Of course, I don't know where he's going to play. He doesn't have a position anymore.
Well, he will, because he can't skip tonight, as long as he's the same guy, if he's a different guy.
I'd
give him back second base. Anyway, and then I want to say congratulations to the Bay Stars and Michael Westbay, because they finished with a winning record versus the Giants for the first time in 9 years. They still had an opportunity to get into fourth place. We'll see if they can climb over the Dragons, who I believe are, their schedule is done. And I think they have a chance to climb over them. They've got to win two games to do it. So we'll see if they can.
Okay. And the Rakuten Eagles dropped into last place. Now they're going to need to either tie or lose their last game against the Buffaloes to stay in last place.
Tie or lose. Does that take a lot of effort? I know the ties would.
No, well, maybe not. They're trying to win. They're at home. And we had, of course, the Japanese, the way teams with batting champions treat rivals. And I didn't notice it at the time. I was just running the numbers for Kyoto. And Matsuba walked 8 guys in 6 scoreless innings. I didn't realize that 5 of them were Genji Akamine.
Yeah, he tied an MPB record, I think, that night. So, yeah, he didn't realize it was one guy he wasn't going to pitch to, right? All right, yeah. So next time we talk to you, hopefully.
Hopefully both of these climax series will have reached their anticlimax.
Yeah. And we can talk about our predictions for the second stage, and then on to the Japan series. It's a great time of year, enjoy your baseball.
Yeah, we'll talk to you next week.
One World Sports is the exclusive home of the Yomiuri Giants in North America and features live coverage of all Giants home games. Please contact your local cable provider to find out how you can watch One World Sports.